Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform.
Okay, welcome to the show, everyone. Today we're joined by Cameron Millard, or Cam for short. Cam, you're lead dev at ShopBlocks.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. Could you give us a bit of insight into ShopBlocks and what that is as a service?
Yeah, so I've worked for ShopBlocks for a couple of years now. Yeah. What ShopBlocks does is it kind of bridges the gap between kind of a Magento style pay for your own website to be built,
yeah,
and the Shopify's model of here's a template, go and use it.
Yeah.
We kind of sit in the middle of that market and kind of solve the problem of can we create something that's not a template and really give you the Magento experience for a much cheaper price.
Amazing.
So that's kind of the market space that we work in, the e-commerce website building space.
Perfect. I mean, we've got, needless to say, Cam, we've got loads to talk about around this. We're definitely going to delve into that a lot in a little bit. But could you give us a bit of insight into your background and your career history and how you got into development, I guess?
Yeah, so development wasn't necessarily my first choice in life, but it did start early. When I was little, it was back in the 90s. It was before the age of the Xbox One and the PlayStation 2, when there was no chance I would have touched it. But my granddad had this old Amstrad, one of those where you put the tape in and you...
Yeah, I remember them.
You wait for 35 minutes to play your game and you're there playing Ghostbusters with a proper 64-bit, like...
the good days.
Yeah, it was classic. Great. Yeah. So he was getting rid of that and gave that to my nan. I used to go around my nan's all the time. So I'd always be there half an hour waiting for the tape. And I thought, do you know what? This is boring. What could I do in half an hour? So I started kind of like seeing if I could create my own games.
Yeah, and I thought amazing.
I thought it was really fun. And I'd be there. I'd start writing a game. I'd type it all in as you have to.
Yeah.
And then write it down on the piece of paper. So next time I knew where I was up to and I could write it up again and do a bit more. and I eventually created this game. And apologize, it was called the Poo Game, right? And
it was amazing.
It was kind of a little bit like Snake, but instead you were kind of like cleaning up poo. You were just going around the screen. And as a kind of like 7-8 year old, it was a big novelty that I made a poo on a computer screen, and when I told my mom, she was horrified, and then she realized I was actually talking that I'd done a game, and she was quite impressed. But yeah, so I kind of moved on from there. That's how it went and really started. And
I've never heard a story like that before, by the way, Cam. That's quite unique.
Yeah, well, we all start in different ways, don't we?
Yeah.
Just my mind took me to that when I was a child. Maybe if I did it again now, I might still do the same game.
The Wii games.
Yeah, well, maybe that'd be quite good. But yeah, so I moved on from there. Realized I was quite good at kind of IT at high school. And to be honest, I did a lot of development in high school. Kind of, I think everyone used Dreamweaver and things like that.
Yeah.
And they were creating websites. I got into it a little bit more than most. And it's because it was that I was kind of a socially awkward high schooler.
Right.
So when the attractive girl next to me just asked me if I could help her with her IT work, I was suddenly amazing. So that got me into it a little bit more, something I don't think I should admit, but there you go.
Yeah.
And kind of got into my A-levels, didn't do the best, wasn't sure what I wanted to do. Mm. So I kind of took a step back and thought development was the pathway for me. So I went, redid kind of a couple of things at college before moving into university and becoming a developer straight off the back of university.
Amazing. Yeah, that's incredible. And, you know, it doesn't seem like it. Your career has definitely been spawned from passion from a young age. Now, are you still inspired by technology as much as you were back then? Are you still kind of, you know, does it still excite you like it used to?
Yeah, I think when I was little, it was kind of like we had very limited technology. Like mobile phones were phones that they weren't devices for using for anything other than Snake. and phone calls. And as a young child, and as I went through my years coming into being a developer, I just kind of asked what technology could do. And I've always, the question that always sticks in my head is, what can we do with what we have?
Right.
Because there's an awful lot there that recent advancements like automated cars, things like that. They're things that we've had the technology for quite a while to be able to start doing these things. What more can we do with what we have now? There must be 1,000 ideas out there that we don't currently work with.
Yeah.
That we could be working on.
There's a couple of things that I want to bring up from this. So the first one is, how do you not get distracted from like the shiny new technology that's out there?
It's a big challenge.
Yeah.
There's kind of, I see there's kind of two types of developers. Mm. There's the developers who are like, oh, new and shiny.
Yeah.
I'm a blackbird and I'm going to pick that up. I'm going to put that in. I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
I've never used it before, but it's new, it's shiny. Let's work into a system.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's people who will say, well, let's let other people use it.
Exactly.
And they can tell us what's happening.
Yeah.
I sit more on that second side of, I want to see what other people have done with it, because it's so easy to build something into a system and think, oh, that's shiny, new and great.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come back to use it and you come back to change it and people have stopped using it. So it's no longer supported. You've then got to change everything from that to something else. And it becomes more of a pain in that scenario than if you just waited a little while and kind of built it in after people had already told you the problems, or you realized that people weren't using those technologies.
Yeah.
And it's an endless problem.
Mm.
And sometimes you are forced into the shiny new side of saying, well, there isn't a technology out there that solves this.
Yeah.
I think a great example of that is the M1 MacBooks. The M1 MacBooks are an absolute beautiful piece of kit.
Check to see if I had one?
Well, I looked down there and I was like, oh, it's a MacBook Air. No, yeah, okay. Yeah. But yeah, the M1s, they're so fast.
Yeah.
And they do some of the processes that we've run as developers can take hours. Until the M1 chip came out and cut everything by a tenth.
It's crazy.
But down to a tenth, I should say.
Yeah.
But the massive problem with the M1s was setting everything up, getting onto that, because loads of people hadn't supported the architecture yet.
Yeah.
So we were every day trying to get these M1s set up that we were working with. It was trying to establish where it was at. And it seemed that at the time when we were setting these up, that a new technology was coming out every day that solved the problem that we couldn't get past.
Yeah.
And so one day we'd be like going home thinking, oh, well, I can't host something on here properly.
Yeah.
The next day it'd be like, oh, well, Parallels now supports it.
Yeah.
Or whatever technology was out there at the time.
Yeah.
And it just kept like piling on. And eventually there was enough technology there for us to get it working.
Yeah, yeah, finally. And also, I've spoken to quite a few leaders on this podcast. And something that comes up a lot in terms of leadership is also about speed. It's fail fast, failing fast. And it comes up all the time, fail fast. What are your thoughts on failing fast?
So it's generally, failing fast is important.
Yeah.
If you have like a web server or a release process and they hang for hours or for minutes or for days,
mm-hmm.
it causes problems, it causes pipelines, it causes issues all across the system. And for example, if you have a server that supports 250 people and you've got one error on your server that's like taking 30 minutes, it only takes 250 clicks for you to be stuck in that position for 30 minutes where no one can access the server, no one can do anything. Whereas if you set it in like 30 seconds or 10 seconds or whatever it is that your maximum line should be, it's much more efficient and allows you that time to correct those mistakes. The hope is it never happened in the first place.
Yeah.
But if you fail fast, it saves you that heartache of potentially going down or having problems.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Would you say your leadership style has changed over time?
I think it's grown and developed as I've learned more. And some of the biggest mistakes I made at first were to do with handling how people think and work. Because you can say one thing to one person and the same thing to another, and they'll react totally differently.
Exactly, yeah.
For example, like if I turn this into a football analogy, right? You had Luke Shaw, and he's worked with Mourinho at United, and there were all sorts of memes about it. And all Mourinho did was badmouth him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done that with other players in the past.
Yeah.
And a great example of someone who he's done that to recently is Tammy Abraham.
Yeah.
Who he's working with currently.
Mm-hmm.
And he's improved in the time that he's done that. And understanding that you can't do that for one person, but you can for another is so critical. And I think originally when I kind of started as a lead, my philosophy was like, say it how it is. But you can't say it how it is to everyone.
Yeah, that's true.
Some people just don't take it too well.
Yeah.
Say how it is to me. I love it.
Yeah.
I'd rather he said to me, bad move. It's fixed.
Yeah. You know, empathy is a huge part of leadership, isn't it?
Yeah. It's...
And it's interesting you should mention a football analogy, actually, because I'm reading Alex Ferguson's autobiography at the minute.
I bought that yesterday, actually.
Did you really?
I went to a charity shop to drop a few things off.
Yeah.
Like I've got like three massive bookshelves in my house.
Yeah.
And I just dropped it off, picked up that. I thought, you know what? While I was there.
Well, you know what? If you want to learn about leadership, it's a great book. I mean, it's a great book to learn about how leadership can be done. I wouldn't necessarily lead like he does.
Yeah, I wouldn't take a hairdryer into my bedroom. No.
He's brutal, you know. If he says you're out, that is literally it. You make one mistake. Definitely not how you should be in terms of technology leadership. But it's interesting to see how other people, like football managers, lead. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't get away with flinging football boots at my players either, but there you go. Might do.
You can always try it. So, in your opinion, you know, looking at leadership as a whole in terms of, you know, developers, what would you say makes the best leader? What are the best qualities that make a great leader?
I think this could be like a pretty long story.
Go for it.
But you've heard of Dunning-Kruger?
I have heard of Dunning-Kruger, but I'm not sure what it is, if you can remind me.
Yeah, so Dunning-Kruger is kind of the opposite of imposter syndrome. It's kind of that concept of feeling like you're better than you are.
Yeah.
Or like feeling like you're God of development.
Okay.
I feel like the people who make the best leaders in kind of a development capacity, the people who've got past that peak of thinking they're the best and kind of have a big humility in knowing stuff, like really Dunning-Kruger comes down to understanding when you can get better and that you're not the best and that there is a lot more to learn and there is a lot more out there. In the technology industry, it doesn't matter what you use, whether it's PHP, JavaScript,
mm-hmm.
Node.js, React, that they're all technologies that you can learn more, you can do more. The guys who make the best like leaders are the guys who know their strengths, know mm-hmm. their weaknesses, and can build upon those. I think one of the classic like job interview questions is tell me your weaknesses. And if someone can't tell you their weaknesses, they probably don't make a good lead developer. They probably don't make a good senior developer either.
Interesting.
Because everyone's got a weakness somewhere. And if they haven't, then you probably shouldn't be interviewing them.
And if they're not, if they're either not aware of those weaknesses or not prepared to tell people what they are.
It's a bit like Skynet. You have to be self-aware. So getting to that level and kind of understanding that there is so much more out there. People who work below you could have just as much knowledge as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as important to learn from them as they learn from you. So giving them that time to pick up your information is great, but also listening to them and mm-hmm. giving them the opportunity to learn from them can be even more valuable because it gives them that added skill that they need to push towards where you are and what you're trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think people want to get into leadership positions for the wrong reason sometimes.
Yeah.
There's so much there that people want, but don't necessarily have the skills to necessitate. Yeah. And it's kind of being able to help others and lead others is something that you have to have a sense of humility.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. You need to have a sense of humility as a lead. And you have to feel as much at fault as anyone else and be able to throw away your ego when you make mistakes, because
100%
the people who make bad developers to be on the like bad lead developers are the people who you can't talk to about their mistakes
mm-hmm.
and you can't correct them. And
we
all make mistakes. Having that correction as a lead developer and being able to take that is more important than mm-hmm. any other part of a lead developer position, and not thinking you're always right.
So it seems to me, I mean, you obviously know a lot about leadership. usually when I speak to people and ask about leadership, they learn in different ways. Everyone has their own way to learn about leadership, or, you know, or has learned about leadership in certain ways. I mean, you mentioned earlier that you had like loads and loads of books. So I presume you're quite a bit avid reader. How else do you learn about leadership? What are your go-to like resources?
I do have a lot of books, but I read a lot less than I like. I'm actually dyslexic, so reading can be a real strain on me.
Yeah.
Which is probably even more like weird thinking about the kind of working in dev as a dyslexic person, reading text all the time. It can be a challenge. But kind of I tend to go to videos and I'll speak to people. I like connecting to a lot of people and kind of getting their advice on what they've done.
Yeah.
And just seeing what I can learn from them. Because generally when you get into kind of any position, there's someone out there who's already done it. When you can find someone who's already done it, it's a great way to pick their brains and get working. And
yeah,
some of these guys are really open to it.
Well, yeah. And actually I find that the tech industry is a really kind of thoughtful space, really. It feels like we're all kind of not battling against each other. It feels like everyone's moving in the same direction or wants to move in the same direction. And it seems like a really helpful community. And you're dead right, though. Not that there's a right and a wrong answer to that. But I think learning from people is probably the best way to learn. And I think if you read about leadership, that can really help you with more formal aspects of leadership, how to respond to certain problems and things like that. But day-to-day stuff, issues with your team, is far better to have a conversation with someone about, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think kind of it dials back to kind of the key skill that you need as a lead developer or a lead of any role, is communication.
Exactly.
It's so hard to learn communication skills from someone else. You kind of just have to teach yourself. There's kind of a bit of a stereotype around developers that they all like to sit at home and in the dark and code in the late hours and be antisocial. That might have been true in days gone by, but nowadays I don't think developers are that. I think
you're so right. You definitely can't pigeonhole a developer these days.
No, I think
absolutely.
It's massively changed, especially across the early 2000s, late 2000s, that anyone wants to get into development. It's kind of like a hot property job.
Exactly. And it feels that if you want to get into development, you can do, really. I mean, there's the barrier of entry into, say, a junior position is much lower now than it used to be, because companies are no longer really looking for someone that's been to university to study computer science, you know, to work as a dev. You know, there's code camps and things like that, which people can do outside their normal role. So that brings much more diversity of people.
Yeah.
Coming into the technology space, which I think is just incredible.
I think in maybe before the 2000s, you probably wouldn't have got away with finding a job if you didn't have a degree.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of great things out there now. Code camps, as you say, and Code Nation. We've got up north, haven't we? They do a great job of training these guys, and you can get in within like 3, 6, 12-month course, and people will bring you on. You wouldn't have got away with that in pre-2000 exactly. Years, I don't think.
You know, so let's paint a bit of a picture here, or do a little bit of role play, maybe.
Didn't notice that's like a podcast.
So let's just imagine that I'm a developer and I want to step up. Say if I'm midweight now and I want to take the step up to senior or lead. How do I know that time is right? And then how would I go about doing that? If there's anyone out there facing this challenge now?
I don't think there's an exact science there.
Yeah.
And I think it depends on the company you work with.
Mm.
You know when you're ready, when you start to look at problems that no one else looks at and can find solutions.
Yeah.
And the big mark of a mid to senior difference for me is the willingness to go and solve those problems that no one else can. Because every business faces them. Senior developers are just the people who can take that on and can say, yeah, like, I don't know how to solve it, but I will solve it. You tend to think of kind of like the mid or junior level developer is someone who can develop and can code, but aren't necessarily ready to take on that responsibility of fixing that big issue, because that they're thinking, oh, well, there's someone else who can do it, but there isn't.
Yeah.
It's an unsolved space.
Yeah.
And that's what a senior's there to do, is to get into that unsolved space and fix it.
It's such an interesting topic, because I think a leader in technology is quite a unique thing, really. I'm trying to compare it to a leader in any other industry, and I can't quite match it up with anything. Does any other kind of leader in any other space come to mind?
It's difficult, because when you see it, it's a leader in like the technology space is doing stuff like deciding what technology to use.
Yeah.
Teaching the rest of your team.
There's a
lot there. Like, to be honest, the closest analogy is a football manager, because they get to pick the players they have and the style that they use. But other than that, it's not an awful lot.
Or maybe, you know, to compare it to, but maybe like a teacher, a school teacher, because essentially what a school teacher would do is to teach the class, in this case it'd be a team, topics for the end goal, which would be the exam. And then the class or the team will then take the exam, get their grades, hopefully the desired grades, and then the teacher would step back and not take any credit for it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, in a way, it's very much like that. But there'd be elements there, like the guys who really want to do more would have an extra test paper ready to go.
That's true.
And so they're going, well, the teacher taught me a lot, but you know what? More.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I've never really thought about that before, but yeah. And then also, let's just say again, I'm an experienced developer, but I'm looking to continue to develop my skills in the industry. What would you recommend for someone like that? How to continue to learn?
There's a million things that come out every day about technology, and one of the best ways to continue to learn for me is finding the latest technologies, and there's a million ways to do that. One great way that I've found is to go onto a jobs website. If you go onto a jobs website, look for what people are looking for, and just go and learn that technology.
That is an amazing piece of advice. And also, I guess that kind of, say if you're just getting into technology and you're learning or deciding what tech stack to learn.
Yeah.
What an unbelievable way to help you decide.
Yeah, just look across the market, see which one's the most popular, and see if you can do it, see if you enjoy it. And there's places like Lynda. There's a thousand things online that allow you to learn these things. And if there isn't, go out and have a play with it. See what you can find. Most frameworks have some form of documentation that is of value. Go and see what you can do with the documentation. Maybe you could be the person to write that example for other people. And that's a bigger challenge. And you'll learn way more doing it that way and delving deep into that documentation than you would following someone else's video.
Yeah, that is such amazing advice. It's funny because I've never heard that before on the podcast. And it just, when you say it, it just seems blindingly obvious, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
You know, and then also I've got a huge question here for you now. I'm definitely putting you on the spot here. But is there anything that you think hasn't changed or frustratingly hasn't changed during your time in the industry? Is there any issues that don't seem to have, you know, been corrected?
Yeah, there is one.
Really?
The biggest problem is that people still stereotype developers as grimy, smelly, working in dark rooms with green writing on a black background. And that is the biggest problem that I have in the industry at the moment. But no, in terms of the actual industry and what's going on, I think the space is constantly evolving. Mm. And I don't, off the top of my head, I can't think of a single example of where people are stuck in a rut of not being able to improve that technology. I think there is still a negative perception from some people that developers are how they've always been or how they've always perceived to have been, which I don't enjoy.
Yeah.
So
I've actually been doing a little bit of internet stalking on yourself, Cam. And
just bad idea.
Well, you know, unfortunately, there was nothing incriminating that I found.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
You've hidden it too well. But what I did find was you are a singer-songwriter, is that correct? Or a musician?
Yeah.
Some description?
I've dabbled with a guitar now and then. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. So this is kind of interesting because I'm not sure, but would you say that there's any similarities between music and engineering or developing?
Well, I think there is at every level in some form. When you're producing a piece of code and you're there to appease your thousands of fans, and at the end of the day, there's people out there who are waiting for you to produce that. But when it actually comes down to playing a guitar, the logic behind playing a guitar and patterns and one thing that I don't think enough young developers and like aspiring developers don't know is that Google's your friend.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is you choose to use, a Bing, DuckDuckGo, I don't know. People don't just get into a development job and remember every function that they're ever going to use and ever going to see. Even as a lead developer nowadays, if I'm using a PHP in the latest version, there'll be functions that I might not remember the syntax or things like that. And you've got to use that to your advantage and use all those bits. And it's kind of the same in music. And if you want to learn some chords for Ed Sheeran's, like just released an album, and you've thought, you know what, I really want to play his latest song. Some people can go out and learn that and kind of just listen to it and hear it. And those people are amazing. Like incredible,
isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And if you can do that, then you're an absolute genius.
Yeah.
And those are the people who you're going to them and saying, oh, well, help me out a little bit. And let's use this to kind of let me learn it as well.
Yeah.
And that allows you to make tweaks and improve it. And it's very much the same in development that you can, sometimes problems are solved and you can go and use that solution and tweak it and improve it and develop. There tends to be quite a lot of similarities in there for me. And music for me was kind of, to go back to like an earlier point, it was kind of communication. A big part of one of the things I lacked as a young person or as a teenager was that great communication skill. And kind of music opened me up and allowed me to be scared and nervous in front of crowds. And when I was probably about 22, 23, I started playing gigs regularly. So I was doing Sundays at places in Manchester. Before I even did shows, university, hard time for everyone. I did a bit of busking.
Really? That's scary, that. And I've never done it, but that's...
It is scary. I was stood outside Poundland next to the Arndale in Manchester.
Really?
And I was singing along. I think it was my second year of university. I didn't have a penny to my name, and that's why I was busking.
Yeah,
I was living at uni and I must have played there for about 2 hours. And the whole time I was just thinking, oh my God, everyone's walking past hearing me sing.
Yeah.
And they're all going to think I'm terrible. And it's a horrible thought. And we all have that irrational sense of lack of self-worth at that point.
Absolutely.
And I kind of got through it and counted up my pennies at the end of the day. And I was like, oh, do you know what? A lot of people actually really like this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when I was like, maybe I'll do it again. Got a bit more confidence. And that's kind of what led into the gigs. And when I went and did those gigs, it was the same again, but it was kind of, it was in an environment where people can't get away. And that's what it felt like. It's like you cornered them with your, your sound.
Yeah.
And being able to kind of communicate with an audience and have the confidence to step up in front of, I think the first gig I did was probably about 50 to 70 people in the bar that I played.
Wow.
I kind of left that with my head held high going, do you know what? That was really nerve-wracking and really scary. But I felt like my communication skill and my confidence to do with my communication blew up from that point, knowing that I didn't have to worry about these things. And I think that's kind of that communication skill all from that has added so much value to what I give as a developer or as a lead developer, compared to if I'd never done that, I'd probably still be a mid-level or junior developer now.
Wow. What a story that is. And there's also one, there's one part of kind of, I guess, growing up, which is like your first real job, which usually for most people, I'd say, I don't want to say most people, but for a lot of people, it's in a public facing role. So it would be behind a bar or front of house, a restaurant.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and you know, I worked in pubs and bars for a few years, and I learned a hell of a lot about people during that time. I think dealing with the public early on in your career in those kind of roles is imperative throughout your life.
I think everything in my career, everything leading up to my first day of a developer was 100% customers and pleasing people and making everyone happy.
Communicating as well, yeah.
Yeah, I think I was an odd one out. I lived in a small town as a child, and so I delivered newspapers.
Right, so, okay.
Newspaper delivery boy, the best one in town. I used to do 3 morning rounds, 3 afternoon rounds. I've always worked hard. I think it's really important to work hard.
So wow, that's a lot of papers.
Used to get up at 6:15 in the morning to get back home for 8:15 to go to school.
Wow.
I probably had more disposable income as a paper delivery boy than I did as a developer.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Mind you, that's because I've got children. So, I did have that. And the step that I took after the delivery boy was to become a glass collector. Yeah. And I was 15 at the time. And there is no way that I would have even got into music if I'd not become a glass collector.
Right.
And it was like everything in my life has been a chain of events at that point. Because when I first got to that bar and I first started working there, I would not talk to anyone. I was scared of my own shadow. At school, a lot of people saw me as an outcast because I was a bit, I wasn't confrontational.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't like to have arguments. I didn't like to make points to other people. I moved forward from that. And glass collecting, there was a girl who went to that bar regularly who I absolutely hated, but I absolutely adored at the same time, because what she did was she forced me to speak to people.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, she took me out of that character of not being able to, feeling like I could say anything and not feeling like I could talk to anyone, to being able to get into that position of feeling confident and being willing to go and put myself in front of a bunch of people and sing a song.
Slowly expanding your comfort zone. And then isn't that crazy how then from that first conversation that you were kind of pushed into having with a customer at a pub, then that by slowly expanding your comfort zone, you ended up performing live in playing the guitar in front of a bar full of people.
Yeah.
That just shows, you know, how important expanding your comfort zone is. I've always thought it, and it totally is. And through that story you were speaking about then, you know, it's quite serendipitous in a way. Not to over-romanticize it, but, you know, you're mentioning all those small steps have led to where you are now as a lead developer. Can you imagine if your granddad never had an Amstrad computer?
And
that was just, you know, it's like the butterfly effect, isn't it?
Yeah, there was this.
I wonder
so
if
much.
You'd still be in the same place now. I wonder if you'd be sat here now.
I don't know. I've never really believed in fate. I've always believed I believe in luck. I think that's maybe a thing.
Right.
But
if you never made
karma.
The poo game.
Yeah, if I never made the poo game, if I never went to work in the railway inn in Shifnal, and never met Katie in there, and it's an endless bunch of things.
It is, isn't it?
That would have never happened.
Yeah.
It does feel that way. It feels like maybe I would have gone and worked in the co-op for 50 years and retired at 65, having been a great manager in the co-op.
Mm. Well, you're here now, Cameron, and that's all that matters for us. So I think that's a really nice point to end on before we get too overly emotional about this. So I've really enjoyed speaking with you today. It's been absolutely fascinating. Some of the stuff we've been speaking about has really opened my eyes a lot. So, yeah, I appreciate you coming down and sharing your thoughts. It's been really, really interesting.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been good fun.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform.